Hello, Susanna Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall. When is it a crime to help someone else do something illegal, maybe? What makes you an accomplice? Today's story explores this thing. Bucket Time by Kerry James, Scarlet Stiletto Late Starters Award in 2009. Dementia, cancer and chlamydia are the scourges of the present age and on the increase. I read from the newspaper to the two people assembled in front of me. Assemble maybe wasn't the right word. They both looked more like heaps of parts in need of a mechanic, who had actually seen old people and not just read about them. "Well, we know about the first two," snorted Iris. "What's chlamydia?" "Oh, it's real pretty little stuff. There's some growing down the side of the RSL," said Gordon. "God, give it up, Gordy!" Iris sent me a look that spelt, "He has to go." Gordon was missing more than a few beats these days, having lost most of his marbles, also a leg from diabetes, a few teeth, and parts of his hands and face from skin cancers. But Iris just meant Gordy had to go. "The men's room, quick," he rasped. "It's up the back where it's always been, Gordy. You grew up in this house. The dunny hasn't walked away." Iris wasn't usually that sharp with Gordy, but she was at the end of her tether, what with looking after him and her older sister, who was in much the same way, and it being not too long since she had seen her poor demented mother into her grave. "He don't want to stay, Beryl, that's the real bugger of it. Day after day, night after night, he whinges and moans about how crook he is, nothing left for him, how he don't want to go on. You can't take him anywhere near the shearing sheds, where he used to be a gun shearer, or the Oval, where he played championship footy. Remembering what he was like reduces him to tears, cries like a bloody baby and gets himself all upset." "Hard on you, Iris. Say that again. But he really, really doesn't want to stay, Beryl. When you've lived with someone for over 60 years, you know." "Mum was the same. Said the doctors had too many ways to keep old people alive when she was tired and had had enough. But they kept on with drips and that. In the end, they was force-feeding her. It was cruel. I asked them to cut it out and they looked at me as if I was a mongrel. I didn't dare mention this euthanasia malarkey, even though we are all meant to be all multicultural. Ha! But the doctors are the ones using up good resources on people that don't want them. We ought to do something about it." She fixed me with a pair of flinty blue eyes I'd known since way before kindergarten. "Oh, we'd have our job cut out. The whole of Creswick is God's waiting room except for them newcomers. Lifestyle changes. Artists, mostly. They keep to themselves. Got nothing against them. It's our mob I'm worried about, Bez. lot of unhappy, sick people wanting a peaceful way out. But will anyone help them? Gordy's past his use-by date and wants to go. Chlamydia, my sweet fanny, down by the RSL, in la-la land, more like. She laughed mirthlessly again and lit another of her medically forbidden cigarettes. I gotta put up with his mad thinking night and day, 24/7. It's degrading, and it's hurting me health. She took a drag and squinted out through the back door. Where's that old bugger got to? He's been rabbiting on about that mineshaft up the hill behind the old dunny. Going on and on like a broken record about the happy times you had when you was kids and you used to go blackberrying and playing around up there. You have got it covered over, haven't you, Beryl? I stared back at her. Gordy was my brother, the last of a long line of country boys used to taking things into their own hands. Well, he wouldn't do anything stupid, would he? Iris had just mashed her cigarette out in her saucer when we heard scraping sounds and thuds and the clatter of timbers echoing down the hill. We got up there as fast as we could, considering my arthritis and Iris's emphysema. The wooden cover of the mine shaft had a wide gap in it, and Gordy's felt hat and his boots were lying on the edge. Gord! Gordy, he's gone! Iris clapped her hand over her enlarged heart. I hugged her, and she hugged me, joined in sorrow as we were over Gordy. He done that deliberately. That's the way he wanted to go, she sobbed. Oh, you don't know that, don't I? He's been talking about it. Why do you think he come here today? How long is it since Gordy dragged his wreck of a body up here to see you in the old place? Besides, look. She kicked at a bottle and white tablets came out of it onto the grass. I hadn't seen it because I was peering down the mine shaft. Hundreds of feet deep, our father had told us it was, and it might have been bottomless for all the hope we had of seeing Gordy. He was gone, any way you looked at it. We stoked the stove with wood and brewed up another cuppa. Well, say it was an accident, Beryl. I won't have the taint of suicide hanging over the family. If the doctors had done their jobs, he wouldn't have had to do this. It was bucket time for Gordy, only he didn't have no bucket. Her blue eyes bored into mine, just like they used to do when we was kids, and she'd get me to do all sorts, sliding down the mullock heaps on old sacks and running up and down the mine workings until we fell and scraped our knees and elbows, tore our clothes, and then got a hiding from our parents. Later, she egged me on to get Gordy to notice her and then to marry her, which, of course, he did once she got pregnant. Iris always did have a strong will, but even that will couldn't have propelled Gordon up the hill and into the mine shaft. I had to accept he'd done that, taken some of his pills to calm his mind, smashed the cover, and put himself down. I'd like to think he dropped back into the magical world of our childhood before old age, pain, and illness had overtaken him. Just like him not to go with his boots on too. He'd told me they'd see him out, and they had. The big metal eyes around the bits of twine he used to lace them up with, staring down the shaft from its edge with their tongues hanging out. That was his last message, to let us know, and so someone else could have his boots, I reckon. They could get me busted for the cover on the mine shaft. Oh, not your fault. The hills are alive with their mine shafts. Death traps they are, their fences rotting and covers all falling to pieces. How was you to know that he was going to do that? True, the Creswick Hills hardly ring with the sound of music, although sometimes the wind blowing down the shafts makes a real eerie kind of caterwauling. It's always been a tough, hard place from its miny beginning, and the grittiness has stayed with its people. All right, Let's just leave him there. But what'll happen now with no body? I might still be able to get his pension. Iris mused until she saw the look on my face. No, I'll report an accident. Don't worry, Beryl. Of course, there'll be talk. I dare say stories ran like wildfire around the community, of us old-timers at any rate, but I didn't hear it. I don't get about much and have my few groceries delivered up to my old miner's cottage. I managed to shove some wallflowers and daisies up by the mine shaft and repair the cover, but I couldn't do any more for Gordy. It's been that hard a winter and cold and wet. In a way, it was nice knowing that he felt he could come home and that now he was not too far away. I can see the shaft from my kitchen window and can chat to him when I'm doing the dishes. Iris had more time to visit me too, and that was nice, though, like I said, she gets a bit domineering at times. I got a shock one day when there was a knock at the door. Iris hasn't bothered to knock since my husband died and the last of the kids left home. With my troubles, she says, I wouldn't be doing anything she couldn't see. It wasn't Iris, as it happened. It was Gwen Tregowan standing on the front doorstep. I hadn't set eyes on her for years. I heard about the mine shaft. She was dead white and out of breath. Oh, yeah? I eyed her off. I was wondering if it could take another. What? I'm in a terrible lot of pain, Beryl. The doctor says I haven't got long, but I don't want to hang about. I'm a burden to myself and a drag on me daughter. I want to chuck myself down your shaft, but I thought it only right I ask you first. You know I was always sweet on Gordy before Iris got him. No, there's no room down there, Gwenny. We can't go filling it up with all the sick people around town. The authorities would start to suspect. Anyway, it's a grave for me brother, sort of like the U.S. Arizona. What the hell are you talking about Arizona for? I haven't come up here to watch bloody Rawhide. I don't care what the authorities think. I want to take my life back. Have you ever stopped to think, Beryl, that one of the very few things in this life that a person can rightly call their own is their death? The authorities are taking it away from us and all those rotten ways of keeping us old sick ones alive. I can guess what Gordy did, and I respect him for it. You better come in, Gwen. Over many cups of tea, Gwen told me her various troubles. She had a bad heart, couldn't hardly breathe, had no energy, got dizzy, had very bad pain at times, and a different tablet for all of them. They say if you take too many pills, you feel crook, so they give me another one to stop me feeling crook, and then I feel worse. Fair dinkum, I've had enough, Beryl. I tried to stockpile Valium to go out easy that way, but they got wise to me. Well, what do you want me to do? That rhubarb you got growing around the old mine shaft. Yeah, I sometimes still cook a little tart or a pie. Not too often these days, you've got to be careful. Even them stalks have absorbed a bit of the metal workings, I reckon. I did get sick one time. I mostly just let it run wild since then. You've got a whole hillside of it. Can I have some? I told you it could have metal in it. You could get... Oh, Gwen! I don't want the stalks, I want some leaves. Well, they'll kill you dead for sure with your heart. Besides, they taste awful. How are you going to get them down? A nice, sweet crumble. I've always liked fresh rhubarb, no one would know. Well, there's plenty of rhubarb growing around town. Well, not like yours, from up around the metal workings. Make a sure thing of it. So help me, she wouldn't let me go until I give her a big bag full of rhubarb leaves. Then she wafted down the path. There was so little left of her, I wasn't sure she'd make it back to her house. Half hoped she wouldn't, poor old thing. But she did get back to her slab cottage, and then she must have made herself a big rhubarb crumble and sat there and ate the whole dish with a bottle of sweet sherry to help it down. The combination alone would be enough to kill you, even if she hadn't made the crumble out of the rhubarb leaves. Next day, she was found dead. Not a skerrick of rhubarb in sight, just the empty dish with bits of burnt sugar sticking to it. So, she was good about it, like she'd promised. No one could trace her back to me. Iris came up a few days later. Gwen Tregowan died of heart failure, she announced, with her eyes boring into me like they did. Well, so did I, nearly, the way she said it. There was something in her tone. Been eating rhubarb, poor old thing. I found a ruddy great leaf in her waste bin when I went around to pay my respects. I wonder if she got muddled and put them in her crumble. Mum used to say rhubarb poisoning was like heavy metal poisoning. Nausea and pain, and it can stop your heart stone dead if it's weak like Gwen's was. A lot of people got it here in them early mining days when food was scarce and they were all living on top of the diggings. Died of it too, the young and the old, especially. And just look at your spread of it up there. What of it? Nothing. Except I found a target bag in Gwen's waist too that looked like she'd used it to carry them home in. Same as what I got that cardigan for you in. Ugh. Target bags are like bottoms. Everyone's got them. Not one with a dated receipt in it for your cardigan. I slumped at the table. Yeah, well, she practically begged me for some. Damn good idea. Wish I'd thought of it myself. But why did the poor thing have to come all the way up here and beg? We should be doing this as a community service. Since Gordy died, I've had that many come and ask me how they can go without a big hoo-ha or bringing disgrace and expense on their families. They come to me one by one, often at the dead of night, pleading. It's humiliating for them. They don't want to leave their homes. They don't want to go into the hospice or any of that kind of carry-on. Old Joe Wilson's just gone in. Well, he wanted to, said Iris shortly. That's okay. I'm talking about the others. What exactly are you talking about, Iris? A community service, like I told you. Cook them up something and send them off happy. Betcha we don't get no complaints. She looked triumphant. We'd never get away with it. Sure we will. I've got it all worked out. You do the cooking, because people know you're good at it. Say you're starting up your business again, but on a small scale from home now, because you can't no longer run a shop. I'll handle the orders. Well, won't people suspect when every one of our customers dies? Yeah, I thought of that. I got the idea from that drug-running pizza parlour that got slammed in Ballarat. Sometimes it pays to get the local rag. See, not all the pies we'll pack are ta-da dos. We'll have a code. You want a rhubarb pie, you get a rhubarb pie. Want a goodbye pie, you put in a special order for a rhubarb pie plus extras. Only we won't be like them drug peddlers. We won't charge for the extras. You mean the leaves? You got it. Leave with leaves. Sisters-in-law can be the very devil and sarcastic into the bargain. And what will you do? I told you, I'll take the orders and make sure they don't get mixed up. And I'll also go around and clean up the dishes afterwards so the powers that be don't catch on. Well, they will in time. Yeah, but what's that to you, Bez? Her blue eyes sized me up carefully. So, Iris and I started our little takeaway business specialising in rhubarb pies, crumbles, tarts and a couple of other items. I had always been known as good cook. We asked that customers provided their own dishes. That way Iris could whip in and clean up the ones that had been used for special orders when their owners no longer needed them and there wouldn't be a dish that didn't belong to the house to start with. We did what we could for the poor old souls we had grown up with. If we didn't love them all, at least we could like them, respect them, and most of all, understand them. Among those in the know, Beryl's takeaway got to be called the Do-Away Cafe. Iris was tickled to death when she heard that. Of course, the doctors and district nurses finally got suspicious. Iris left last week to go and live at her younger sister's place in Queensland. She offered to take me with her, but I can't abide her sister. Never have. Besides, it's too late for me to relocate. I just went up the hill to chat to Gordy. Well, I've done all I can here about dementia and cancer, I told him. But I still don't know what to do about chlamydia, Gord. It'll just have to keep running wild down by the RSL. Silly bugger he was. What laughs we'd had. What good times. I picked some rhubarb on the way back and made a pie. It'll do for me supper. No point trying to buck it when it's bucket time. The end. Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creators.